We will begin our service, after I ring my bell, with our opening hymn, which is printed in the blue order of service you'll find in your hymnal. Please rise in body or spirit. To the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Winona. My name is Jim Armstrong, and I've been a member since 2001, along with my daughter Pippa and my wife Laura, and my other daughter Dot, who's off to college. And I'm a member of the Sunday Service Committee. If you are new to our Sunday Fellowship, we especially welcome you, and we hope you enjoy the service and find yourself challenged and supported for your work in the world. We invite you to stay for coffee and conversation after the service. Are there any introductions by our greeter, or would anyone like to introduce him or herself?
I'll introduce myself. I'm Lauren Layton, and I'm often down the hall with the Quakers.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Welcome again.
And I'm Vernon Layton, likewise.
I'm Ann Plummer with the Quakers.
And I'm Winna Mortensen. I live in Galesville, Wisconsin, and I'm with the Quaker group as well.
I'm Carol Slade, and I'm with the Quakers.
I'm Ellen Knott, also down the hall, and this is Josie Gunderson, our daughter.
Kind of a spoiler there, in case you didn't notice, we are full of Quakers today. That's because that's going to be our service today, where the Quakers are going to share. Oh, yes.
We have some friends with us today, Emma Olecki from Trumpolo and Noel Pollock.
Welcome.
Emma!
Anyone else?
We have a tiger.
We have a tiger. I think it's Tigger, as a matter of fact. Yes, as I said, that kind of gives away the fact that we're having the Quakers will be presenting today, so that's a special treat for us. They do that every year. Because we do share in common several things, including our RE, our religious education, and our coffee hour. So we especially are happy to have them among us today. Some announcements. If you haven't read the book that we're going to discuss next week, Dick has kindly made 6 pages of excerpts, which will be sent out via email. So please take a look at those so you'll be ready for the discussion. And I should have mentioned the book, Regaining Balance by Michael Werner. So I think there is maybe another copy in circulation.
There were 5.
Well, yes. So if anyone wants a copy, we can make sure that happens. Just talk to Dick or Bob at the end of the service. Otherwise, read the redaction. The K through 4 grade RE class invites any member of the fellowship to bring a photo of a loved one who has passed away to add to their Day of the Dead altar. The youth grades 9 through 12 will meet next Sunday, November 2nd, after the service. And in the latest newsletter, there is an interview with Isaac Hitz Graff. Please take a moment to read the exciting things he's up to. And if anyone has suggestions about other graduates to reconnect with, please contact Tove. Now, if you would all take just a moment to silence your cell phones, that we would appreciate that. I guess last week we had a demonstration of how that can go horribly wrong. So that's a good idea for us to all sort of focus on being here now. And as I said, our service will be led by Ellen Ott from the Quaker Fellowship, and she will be introducing us to the Quakers' perspective on the sacred and how Quakers attempt to honor and participate in the divine. And next week's service, of course, will be this discussion with Michael Werner. At this time, we will affirm our community by saying together the chalice reading as printed in your blue order of service. We have come together today.
Now is the time to make this our place.
We are Unitarian Universalists. We light this chalice. It is our symbol. It represents all of the important things which make us who we are and which hold us together. Let us create our space together and make for ourselves a safe place to grow and learn and be fully who we are. Now, if you'll please rise in body or spirit while we sing hymn number 349 in our hymnal. Its original tune, which is Adrian Valerius's Nederlandisch Gedenkenklank, I think is marvelous. I will now place a shell in the water in commemoration of our Unitarian principle number 5, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within congregations and in society at large. We invite you now to place a shell in the water in celebration of or in concern for a person or an event in your life that we may share in your joy or give you comfort in your sorrow.
Well, my brother Emmett, his knee is feeling better.
I am just so happy for this beautiful fall weather. My dad keeps complaining that it hasn't frosted yet, but I love it.
Yesterday I attended the Winona State University Parade and Fred Foss with Emmett. Oh, no, that's for Fred.
Was he on a float?
He was on a float. Putting the shell in the water for Mary Ellen Carlson, who some of you may know. She taught piano lessons in Winona for many years, and she was my friend and a neighbor. She passed away on Tuesday.
I place a shell in the water for Jack Kane, former vice president of Winona State and acting president, and a very important person on campus.
I want to put a shell in for a joy. Pippa and I ran in the first annual Houston Hoot Scoot on Friday night, which was a fundraiser for their International Owl Center. And it was just so much fun. It was a run, you know, with it took place at 8 o'clock at night, and it was all lit up with luminaria. And I'm joyful that I was actually able to run a 5K, and also that Pippa was with me, and she took first place in her age class. And Laura walked it, and she was the first among walkers. We Unitarians are fast, fast, fast. We will now take a moment of silence for these joys and concerns, both spoken and unspoken. To give is to receive. We affirm our fellowship and its service to the larger world through our generous gifts as we pass our offertory baskets. If you are giving a portion of your pledge as cash, please be sure to put it in an envelope with your name on it. And now, will the children come forward for our children's story, after which we will sing our going out song in a round, first all together, and then as a round this side story. Well, today we have a story from Days with Frog and Toad, one of my personal favorite books of all time. And this story is called Alone. Toad went to Frog's house. He found a note on the door, and the note said, "Dear Toad, I am not at home. I went out. I want to be alone." "Alone?" said Toad. "Frog has me for a friend. Why does he want to be alone?" Toad looked through the window. He looked in the garden. He did not see Frog. Toad went to the woods, but Frog was not there. He went to the meadow, and Frog was not there. And he went to the river, and there was Frog. He was sitting on an island all by himself.
"Poor Frog. He must be very sad. I will cheer him up."
Toad ran home and made sandwiches and a pitcher of iced tea, and he put everything in a basket, and he hurried back to the river.
"Frog," he shouted, "it's me. It's your best friend, Toad."
But Frog was too far away to hear. Toad took off his jacket and waved it like a flag. Frog was too far away to see. Toad shouted and waved, but it was no use. Frog sat on the island and did not see or hear Toad. Turtle swam by. Toad climbed on the turtle's back.
"Turtle, carry me to the island. Frog is there. He wants to be alone."
"Well, if Frog wants to be alone," said the turtle, "why don't you leave him alone?"
"Well, maybe you're right. Maybe Frog does not want to see me. Maybe he doesn't want to be my friend anymore."
"Yes, maybe," said the turtle as he swam to the island.
"Frog, I am sorry for all the dumb things I do. I'm sorry for all the silly things I say. Please be my friend again."
Toad slipped off the turtle, and with a splash, he fell in the river. Frog pulled Toad up onto the island. Toad looked in the basket. The sandwiches were wet. The pitcher of iced tea was empty.
"Our lunch is spoiled," said Toad. "I made it for you, Frog, so you would be happy."
"But Toad," said Frog, "I am happy. I'm very happy. This morning when I woke up, I felt good because the sun was shining. I felt good because I was a frog. And I felt good because I have you for a friend. I wanted to be alone. I wanted to think about how fine everything is."
"Oh," said Toad, "I guess that's a very good reason for wanting to be alone."
"Now," said Frog, "I will be glad not to be alone. Let's eat lunch."
Frog and Toad stayed on the island all afternoon and ate wet sandwiches without iced tea, and they were two close friends sitting alone together.
Go now in peace, go now in peace, may the spirit of
As I mentioned, it's a great pleasure, as always, to have the Quakers speak to us, as we are kin in many ways, as coming out of the same centuries of liberal religion and religious experimentation. And Ellen Ott is a member of the Winona Friends meeting and serves as their clerk. And she will discuss the Quaker perspective on the sacred and how the Quakers attempt to honor and participate in the divine, and then also we'll briefly introduce and explain the guidelines for worship sharing, which is how we will explore our understanding of and our experiences with the sacred today. Worship sharing is a method Quakers use to explore a theme or question and share that with others. It's slightly different than meeting for worship, which is generally quieter and more reflective, and the method used in Sunday worship. So I guess without any further ado, I will invite her to come up.
So it's a pleasure to be here once again, and we did this last year, and we really enjoy getting the invitation to worship with our UUs, as we say. Quakers, as Jim was saying, I guess we share a time in history where we're considered the liberal religions, but one of the things that distinguish us from the more traditional religions, I think, are how we view the sacred and how we try to bring the sacred into our everyday life. I was raised Catholic, in the brand of Catholic that went to Catholic school, went to Mass a few days every week, and so that was very important to me growing up. And I think comparisons are kind of helpful sometimes when we're trying to understand where we have ended up. So, of course, in the Catholic tradition, and I'm sure in a lot of our traditions that maybe I share with you, the sacred, there was a special place for the sacred, and it wasn't necessarily in your everyday life. It was in the sacristy, it was in the altar, it was in the buildings that where we worshiped. And a lot of times it was held by certain individuals that had the authority to tell us what the sacred was. So priests, nuns, or pastors, they held the sacred, and the rest of us could experience it at a certain time and a certain place. So when the Quakers talk about the sacred now, it's about how we try to experience the sacred in our everyday life. So making time and space to appreciate things that are sacred and being present enough that we recognize the sacred in every day. So, for example, just getting a glass of water and how sacred clean water is to us and how we share that resource with each other and try to keep it clean for each other. That would be an example of how the sacred is. We experience that in every day. I'm just going to read a little bit about how Quakers feel about sacraments and how we differentiate ourselves from how sacraments are observed. The Quaker movement was founded on the conviction that the whole of life is sacramental. The founders refused to designate any particular observance or practice as being more sacred than another. They assumed the same position with respect to time or to special days. Sunday was regarded as no more holy than Saturday or Monday, and that's where we have language that reflects that. So, for example, Sunday we call first day, just meaning that, okay, it's the first day of the week. It's really no more special than any other day. We also don't consider holidays to be more special. So, for example, Christmas is not more sacred than the day before or the day after or the middle of July. While both Catholic and Protestant traditions in mid-17th century required the observance of certain rites as a prerequisite for membership, friends were persuaded that although to be a member of Christ's body involved no outward rite, it does require an inward transformation of one's whole life. And so that's why we don't baptize children. We don't think that an outward rite is superior to that inward transformation. So we've always tried to focus on the change inside of us. So to explore this and how we all experience the sacred in our everyday life, we're going to do a worship sharing today. And in worship sharing, we invite people to speak out of the silence if they want to share something that they have discovered about the sacred in their life. I'm just going to read a few guidelines so people feel comfortable with doing this. We wait in silent worship in union with each other and share gleanings from our spiritual journeys. Each person has the opportunity to and is encouraged to share. You should not feel that you must be prompted by the Spirit before you speak. This is a little bit different than in meeting for worship. No person is ever required to speak. You can participate fully by listening only. In order to allow the space for each of us to share, be mindful of the length of one's offering. And typically each friend shares only one time. Allow ample silence between sharings. Hold the gift that each person offers in the light without judgment. Try to speak from your own experience rather than speaking of the experience of others or of abstract ideas. Avoid commenting on or responding directly to what someone else has said. One may, of course, share on themes or concerns raised by another as they apply to one's own life. Speak to the group. Avoid addressing any individual present. Worship sharing depends on our respecting and honoring each other. So those are the guidelines, and when I sit down, we'll go right into worship sharing. And the query for today would be, how do you experience the sacred in your everyday life? Thank you.
This time of year, I'm reminded of the cycle of life through the changes in the leaves, the beautiful colors, the falling of the leaves, the sounds the leaves make under my feet. And I feel that these cycles of death and rebirth are very sacred.
say it's hard not to feel something sacred or sublime in the fact that we're fortunate to live in this valley of this time of year when it's been so beautiful. And again, the color of the season and preparing for the what's to come, it will also be sublime. So truly it's hard not to be feel the sacred in this place.
I feel like the sacred, the beautiful and the sacred go together for me as well, but somehow I always want the beauty to make me worthy of it, as though it should draw my best self out. So I'm always, when I feel I think the most sacred is when there's a strange union between something beyond myself that makes me want to access my better or higher self, which is often hard.
I find sacredness in everyday routines, just getting up, caring for my pets, going to school, having to work, but also having time to do fun things, spending time with my family and friends, just all these simple things. All the simplicity is just kind of sacred. And to be able to do all that and not have to overcome extreme adversity or anything, just having all these simple things that sometimes get taken for granted. Just taking time to appreciate that.
I am reminded often about how sacred spontaneous connections are with other people, especially as the fear and anxiety rises in the world. If I'm walking down the street and I make eye contact with someone I don't know and we both smile, what a sacred moment that is, given what's happening around us. And I'm in awe of that.
We have three children, all of whom live some distance away. And for me, the sacred is when we connect, either we contact them or they contact us. And just a casual phone call, a few minutes, just is so very special, sacred.
I have a couple of readings prepared. I would like us to reflect on what a long way we have come from Christianity as it was in the 1600s or 1400s. What blaspheme we would have all just been speaking for finding the sacred in such everyday simple things, and how radical it was for George Fox and the Quakers to step away from that. I grew up a Lutheran, and there are only two sacraments in the Lutheran Church, baptism and communion. I believe Catholics have seven, if I remember correctly. And when I thought about changing to Quakerism, I first checked out a book from the library to find out what I was getting into. And it's called The People Called Quakers by D. Elton Trueblood, copyright 1966. So Quakerism has come a long way since 1966 as well. And back then, it was still a very Christian denomination. And now there are many Quakers who are non-theists. But at the time, it was very much another denomination of Christianity. And they really related to other denominations to explain what was different about Quakerism. Regarding the sacrament of baptism, I'm quoting now. Sometimes when people who have only a little knowledge of Quakers are asked how Quakers are distinguished, it is answered that they are the peculiar Christians who do not observe the sacraments. It would be nearer to the truth to say the Quakers are distinguished by the intensity with which they accept the idea that ours is a sacramental universe. Bodies are important just as truly as minds and spirits are important. This is why Quakers, like other Christians, feed the hungry. It is why they seek to heal broken bodies. Quakers do not intend and have never intended to establish a merely spiritual religion. Quakers take so seriously the idea that ours is a sacramental universe that they cannot limit the notion to a particular ceremony of initiation. The water which washes children's clothing is as holy as water that is called holy water when it has been blessed by a priest. And regarding Mass, as they say in Catholic Church, or communion, the bread and wine sacrament. The argument about the nature of the Mass is one which Quakers' thought proposes to transcend. Whether Christ is actually present in the bread and wine on the altar becomes an idle question when once we understand that he is found wherever his followers are truly members one of another, because they are engrafted into him. That such presence is not limited to times when people partake of physical bread and wine is obvious. Christ's presence may be as vivid in the consumption of rude fare in a humble cottage, where a man and a woman toil to feed their children, as it is at any altar consecrated by any priest. The notion that Christ is especially identified with bread and wine simply because these were the staples of Palestinian diet centuries ago has no rational basis. It is agreed that the sharing of food and drink is something which facilitates a deepening of fellowship. But the drink need not be wine. It might just as well be coffee. It is a fortunate fact that the ceremony of the recognition of Christ's presence, which is what Holy Communion really is, became connected with such common things as bread and wine. This is a vivid way of saying that Christ is connected with common life, whatever the period, and whatever the geographical location. He is to be found not in some holy of holies, access to which is limited on the basis of ecclesiastical status, but wherever and whenever men and women truly open their hearts to him. The Quaker criticism of Holy Communion, as usually understood, is not that it says too much, but that it says too little. The ideal, which seems a high one, but may not be too high, is that every home should become a society and every common meal a sacramental experience.
I find the sacred in the places where I feel gratitude, when I remember to feel gratitude, or in retrospect, I look at experiences I wasn't grateful for at the time and realize that now I'm grateful for. In common things like societal norms, people pulling over for an ambulance that we can all be in agreement for this common good. The unity of people singing the national anthem, regardless of what it might represent, but the unity there. The beautiful colors, of course, but also the moments presented to me to encourage me to stretch and grow. Good health and just opportunities in general. Opportunities are sacred.
I know the sacred too much by contrast. The beautiful landscape, the sacred holy, in contrast to that which has been desanctified and spoiled. The politics of trust as compared to that of fear.
am struck by how recognizing the sacred requires that we're present, to each moment, so that we can recognize the sacred, and that when I can do this, it had many moments in the day. Sometimes it's just noticing something, recognizing something in another person that seems to be divine, being able to see the light of God in someone. But I'm also struck by how the sacred requires some agreement among us that we hold something sacred. And I think the phrase, "isn't anything sacred anymore," points this up. That there has to be some agreement among us that we hold something sacred. For me, the sacred, the definition of what is sacred, is ever expanding. And that gives me a lot of joy. It's not in a box anymore. It's just rather how I experience things.
Now perhaps we could all come out of our silence into song. We rise to sing hymn number 318.
What's the number?
318.
Searching for the meaning.
for musical meditation, following which, as Ellen pointed out, we will have our sacred communion with our coffee. Go in peace. Oh, I'm sorry. I was supposed to say that. Yes, there's a water bottle back there if somebody...